toss. It falls for D'Agostini. Sankey tees it up and scores. Woo! Zach Sankey. Gavor Djarvian for Nacho Larrange. It's Nacho. But he's got Larrange. It's Yaniv Bazine. An exclamation point. The man who will not stop scoring. Jones heads it down and it's pounded in. The captain, Jake Ashford. The green lead.
That's Clapton. Hey, this is United in Green. We are season 2, episode 5. So we're now on the right track with our episodes. That's great. We are now streaming live on YouTube. So obviously, you know that if you're there. If you're not, I mean, check us out later. Or don't, because we have ugly faces.
Speak for yourself.
I know. We do have two of the best beards in the Vermont Green fan base. So that's for sure. Yours is very robust. I like it. You look like a logger. So the handsome fella that I'm talking with, that's to the left of my screen, you all know as our current reigning and returning champion, Tyson. How you doing, man?
I am doing great. I have my ginger tea with a little dollop of honey in it to make sure that my voice tries to stay at least a little bit stable for this conversation that we're going to have tonight. But other than that, I'm still feeling ecstatic from this past Tuesday.
You know, I'm hoping, Tyson, that is Vermont pure honey.
It is. It's locally sourced from, I think, over in Glover.
Glover. Oh, that's funny. Glover. I just met somebody from Glover the other day. I didn't know they have no stop signs or stores or anything in that town.
Nothing in Glover.
They got bees, though. So we're here today to we have an actual tangible game to talk about, something that we were able to do, able to go to, able to cheer at and have fun and lose our voices at, and jump up and down and get the fans going and get the team going. We had a game in the U.S. Open Cup, also known as the USOC for the people that are in the know. There's only a few people that are in the know, but we are a few of them, a couple of them. So we played Lexington Sporting Club. They're out of a team out of Kentucky. For anybody who didn't listen to the pod last week, Will and I had a discussion with Tyler from the Crane Kicks Lex podcast. Wonderful, wonderful guy. I can't say the same for they have a co-host named Kyle who didn't give Vermont Green much of a chance at all, and said it would be an embarrassment if Lexington lost. So I think I'm going to have a conversation with their Tyler about the co-host jinxing their team. So we'll that'll be another podcast altogether.
I was going to say, as much as you and I, and hopefully all the people who do listen to this, you know, we are fervent Vermont Green fans. We love this club. We follow this club. But, you know, that being said, this is a team in Lexington that should have beat us. These are professional players. Have their striker, Cameron right. Archer?
Cameron Lancaster.
He is the envy of probably all the teams in USL1. He's a former mainstay of the USL Championship over at Louisville. Yep. And, you know, he showed his class. He scored two beautiful goals against us. One, a wonderful looping free kick and then, you know, another one basically on the half volley. This is a team in Lexington that, you know, I know that we were kind of, you know, joking about it, about that other host on Crane Kicks Lex. But this is a team that, yes, they should have been expecting to beat us, and they did not. Tyler, what do you think about that?
Uh-oh. Returning to the podcast for the first time in season two, we have Tyler, the creator. What's going on, man?
Hello, friends. Glad to be here once again. How's everybody doing? Have you recovered your voices and your emotional centers and all that jazz?
I'm still emotionally uncentered, but I do have my ginger tea with some honey in it.
So Tyson's gone the route of the nice natural cure for laryngitis. I have decided to double down on my laryngitis. Back on the beer. I didn't have any beer last night.
This is a good test. We'll see which one is the better approach. And
I think Tyson's approach is better. I think it's time tested. amongst many singers of screamo bands and people who sing in the higher octaves. We were just discussing how one of the co-hosts on the Crane Kicks Lex podcast did jinx his team with his bravado. But as Tyson was just saying, this is a team that should have, on paper, easily beat us. This is a team of men who are being paid to play the game. Cameron Lancaster is one of the highest paid players in USL One. These are guys who have broken through the pre-professional ranks into the professional ranks. Some of them have even played in the USL Championship. And MLS Next Pro ranks. This is a team that was put together specifically to win. The owners went out and spent a lot of money. And for what I can tell, looking at previous matches to the match against Vermont Green, is they only made four changes from their previous game, from the previous league game to play against Vermont. So I was just talking to Dan on the Tactics podcast, and we mentioned the old Mike Tyson, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? And it happened really quick, and I think that put them on their heels. But I mean, what did you see, Tyler, out of that match? Because there was some crazy stuff that happened, like straight off the bat, like with our attack, with our ability to take the ball from them in the midfield.
It was, I mean, I think the Tyson quote is dead on. I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure they prepared for this game thinking we should win this, we are going to win this, but let's not get it overconfident. I feel like most teams are smart enough not to overplay their hand, but still, man, to be down two goals in the first 10 minutes, that's got to be a shock. And like, I was joking with somebody at the time. It's like, it's almost as if they forgot there was a back post, a second post, and that they had to, you know, cover it. And that was just two of the easiest set piece goals you're going to see. And then Jake scored another goal off a set piece. And it's just, yeah, I, on paper, absolutely. I mean, they are a better team, but I think the big takeaway for me was that like, there is a actual pretty steady spectrum between USL 2 and USL 1. They are not operating at a level that's so far above and beyond where we are that we can't play up to that level. And that to me is like fascinating. And the outcome is, I think it's the fact that a USL 2 team can run even and beat a USL 1 team is great for both leagues. It shows that there's that connectivity and that, you know, there's some continuation of quality from as you move up in the divisions, but it's not like worlds apart. I don't think anybody would guess that 10 minutes in, 20 minutes in, we'd be up 2-0, 3-1 and just running the game. And I wonder if you guys have any thoughts on how much of that was just sort of like, did the initial goal knock them off their plan? Was it the second goal? Was it the cold? Was it the travel? Was it the crowd? Like, it seems like they were just really, up until the second half, really just disjointed. And even then, didn't really fully hit their stride in a way defensively or on the attack that like spoke to them being like a, you know, on paper, a much better team.
I really, truly think it was two things. It was, like you said, Tyler, that first, like those two quick goals off of set pieces, I think that that really set them back. And I also truly think that the size of the crowd at Virtue, the noise, the energy, just the vibe that though that this team from Kentucky walked into, I can't imagine that they were expecting anything like this to happen within the first 20 minutes of this game. And I'm, you know, I do know that they are, for a USL One team, they're pretty well supported. They have fans who show up to every game, but they were not expecting to walk into, you know, smoke, flares, constant chanting, and a crowd that was really willing the boys in green to victory.
I think too that they were playing, they're playing tactically a little bit different than they had set up in previous league matches. And I think, you know, a little bit of that, and not to say that set piece defending is different from match to match, but they set up with two at the front, you know, which, you know, similar to us, they did not run a 4-4-2 like we did. We set up to play pretty stoutly on the defense, but wanting to control the midfield with the two wingers and the two defensive midfielders. I think we did that for the most part. I think the fact that Vermont Green came out on the front foot, and I think they were, you know, obviously we got the easy goal where Zach was just kind of left open, sitting there by himself at the back post. Like, he didn't even, like, if you watched the match, he didn't even come into the picture until the ball was probably halfway through its flight.
And
he just kind of showed up there.
There were two other Vermont players next to him. Like, he wasn't alone. He was with two.
Right. So like when the ball came in, I think a lot of the Lexington players kind of just crashed onto the ball, and they just kind of misjudged the flight of the ball. We like I was talking today, there were a million times where you've seen those balls just fly across the backside of the goal, you know, for a goal kick. And it's never picked up. We just kind of left the guy out there. He made his way into the box when everybody just crashed around the keeper and probably had the easiest goal of his career. Now that put them on their heels. What I think they didn't expect from there was the Vermont constantly coming at them. It's not like Vermont had a ton of possession. We had about 35 to 38% possession, you know, we weren't allowing a lot of balls past, you know, the second third of the field. Like, balls were being intercepted. They were allowed to pass the ball around the box all night long and look for those crosses. Their first goal came off of a decent counterattack, but I think Vermont just pressed them. They pressed them not necessarily high, but they pressed them through the midfield. And that's kind of a hallmark of what Vermont Green does. For me, a lot of what they do is intercepting balls in the midfield, getting it quickly out and kind of, it's kind of like, they're great at pressing, but they're also great at counter pressing. And I think that's where Vermont wins a lot of games.
I was going to say, I have some stats for you, and I want you guys to try and guess who this player is. This is a Vermont Green player, won 4 tackles, won 13 aerial duels, played the full 90 minutes, completed 80% of their passes, got fouled 6 times, and had the most dribbles in the game with 3 successful dribbles. Who is that player?
It's got to be either Musa or Rodri, right?
No, Mike?
No, really?
It's going to be Bernardo Prego.
It's Benny Prego.
That guy had a game.
Benny Prego was a beast for that game. He completely shut down Isaac Cano, who he did score the first goal for Lexington, but that was like, I mean, I heard you, Mike, on the megaphone basically saying that, you know, he only scored that goal because the first Lexington player, he took a crack at it, missed the ball, had a really lucky bounce right into the path of Cano. And Prego locked down his side of the field.
I know. He must have had a hard time running around because he had Cano in his pocket. And then later on, when Cano got substituted out, he had Onan in his pocket too. And Onan is one of their big signings. Onan is a guy that they thought was going to be their superstar. And he just really hasn't shown up yet this year for them, but I'm sure that they're going to be perfectly fine. I look forward to watching a lot of Lexington games. I think they had a lot of exciting players. They pass well. They're very organized. They know their system and they know what they want to do. But again, what happens when you get scored on so quickly, when you're not expecting it, you get all your plans just kind of go to shit.
Yeah. I think we can't overemphasize how much of a game Benny had. Like those stats are, I knew he had like a hell of a game, but those stats are still just astounding to me. Those are like just, you know, man of the match stats by a long shot. He was
my man of the match. Easily.
He was phenomenal, and not just in the sense of how he played, but the style with which he played. Like he was like lighting people up, was completely calm with the ball, was just absolutely in control. And he was, I mean, you could tell in the first 20 minutes that he was not going to get beaten easily and he was going to be a huge part of the game. And but going back to our sort of midfield domination, like Musa and Rodri were just everywhere and winning second balls and you know, absolutely dominant. And then I think one of the smarter substitutions was bringing on Daniel Pacella, who I think had fresh legs, and he had a couple of just absolutely essential tackles during that second half, and I think was exactly sort of like spine stiffening classic six that we needed in the mix, right, just to sort of like lock down the game. And he was phenomenal. I mean, what blew me away, and I'd love to get your take on this, is just like watching this game and seeing the individual skill, but then remembering that they had like 2.5-3 days to pull this shit together, right? This was like an A-team style, like we got to put something together. You're like boarded up in like a barn or something, and you assemble this thing out of like spare parts and like old, you know, engine bits and all this, and this amazing thing comes out. And like, I mean, beating Lexington SC in the midst of a regular season would be super impressive and something worth celebrating. Beating them in an Open Cup game with minimal preparation, new coaches, new players, zero practice time, like that's absurd, right? Like that's just a whole other level of legendary in my mind. Like, what does that tell us about these players and these coaches? Like,
I mean, this is Ocean's 11 without the clever planning montages.
Yes.
And you know, those Soderbergh-esque walk and talks. It's a wonderful job by Coach Pfeiffer to bring this group of players together to set up a game plan that they could execute. And you know, again, we keep on talking about it, but those two early goals just made their overall game plan so much easier to execute. They were able to set themselves up for success and then just play really good lockdown, deep, you know, counter play from there. they scored that goal by Leibowitz with the amazing run and cross by Castillo. Yeah. Like, I think that it might be, you know, a different talking point if we had only scored all of our goals from set pieces. Then you can just be like, oh, you know, you just got, you know, lucky on a couple of set pieces. None of this was from open play. But that passing interchange that we had showed, like you were saying, Tyler, the connection that these guys were able to get super quickly and just bond together. And I mean, it is great.
I'll also say that, like, that goal that was disallowed, which I will stand by the fact that Sydney was onsides, like, that was another just, like, absolute firecracker of an open play goal. And I think it was, I don't know if Pierce O'Brien was on the field at that point, but I think he drove down the wing and crossed his beautiful ball. Sydney smashed it in, was ruled offsides, but, like, it was another bit of just, like, super fluid, super fast open play that, again, came together in the space of 72 hours, which is crazy.
For guys who had never played together before as well.
Yeah. Like,
it's pretty wild to me. So you just mentioned two guys who were substituted for each other. Castillo is, and hopefully he has enough time to kind of recover, because we all saw it happen, you know, I mean, and you see it often with guys that are super, super pacey, that play in positions that have to change directions and change speeds, you know, really often. Lots of times you see it with guys who you know, center backs and stuff like that, who are in left and right backs who are super, super fast and have to change direction. But those hamstring injuries, when they happen, you know it. And you could tell. And it was even more apparent on the rewatch, you know, because the camera was right at that side. And, you know, we wish him a happy and healthy recovery, because he's a player that we're going to need. And he was super, super impressive for the, 43 minutes he was out there and able to go. And I know he wanted to keep going, but we had the luxury of having somebody who a youngster from New England who understood what New England weather was like, understands what New England football is like, and Pierce O'Brien, and you know, a kid out of West Hartford, played in the championship, got his first start in the championship for Hartford Athletic at 17 years old. So he's played at a high level already. He's, you know, he was discovered at like what 14, 15 years old. And here's a kid who's 19 years old coming in to a US Open Cup game and subbing into a game that he probably didn't think he would have to sub into, and just coming in cold. And he ran those guys ragged for the rest of the night.
They're going to be, their right backs may be having nightmares about him for quite some time.
It's like, even more amazing because he's primarily been used as like a number 10. So he's a facilitator. He's one of these guys who can, you know, he does well with hold up play. He turns well. He passes well. Like his vision on the field is amazing. And he can be one of those box to box guys, but he can also play that number 10 role where he's a facilitator.
He had those two just amazing one-on-ones with a goalie, and you know, on a different day, those both go in. But like, just the fact that he would just breezed through so easily on both occasions, you're just like, this game unto itself was fantastic. But like, it's made me even more excited about the upcoming season, just seeing the talent and skill in that the new guys are bringing, seeing the quality and familiarity that the old guys are bringing back, and just knowing that it's all going to actually gel and coalesce in a way that's above and beyond what we saw from the past, you know, for 3 days of practicing together. But yeah, Pierce was phenomenal. Leibowitz was just brings like a level of experience and strength and calmness. And you can see that he's played at a higher level, and it's just such an amazing option to have up front. And I loved having him and Bazzini playing side by side. I thought that was like top notch stuff.
Yeah, and you know, also having Sidney up there too.
Those two Lexington defenders were typical to like move those two guys off the ball, take a like crack shot at goal that really was only deflected by an amazing reflex save by the Lexington keeper. And I believe Jake scored on the corner afterwards, but like just the ability to read that ball as it was coming in over his shoulder, get the position on those two Lexington defenders and be able to outmuscle them and then outpace them for that ball. I having him and Bazzini up front for the regular season is going to be madness.
It's going to be nightmarish for people. It really is, you know, and also having the luxury of having somebody like Sidney up there too. Like, I think we make a lot of what, you know, the 4 days of prep that they had. A lot of these guys, they do know each other. They played for university. A lot of these guys played for University of Vermont together, right? So they do know each other. They do know their playing styles. Sydney's one of these guys that I think is probably destined for bigger things. You know, he to me looked like he was in a class of his own out there at times. Yeah. And I think he's destined maybe for bigger things than the USL one. Hopefully he sticks around for at least part of the summer. It'd be great to get some play out of him. Like we had from Aitor, like we had from, Gvork. It would just be lovely to see that, kind of, that player out there. Cause like that front three was, or well, front two really. But you know, with the wingers out there, I mean, like, watching this game play out the way it did was just, it was pure joy for all of the people in the stands, not just the Green Mountain boys, and not just the fans watching at home, but it was like pure joy for all of us.
I think there's a real moment happening around the Open Cup, and it manifests in a couple of different ways. One is, I think there's like a real sense of camaraderie amongst non-MLS clubs and leagues, and just the sense of like, no, like, you don't get to speak for the entirety of like US soccer. There's like all these amazing things happening on a really local level, on a smaller level, and they're just as significant, if not more important, than whatever sort of like pseudo monopoly you may have on US soccer. And also just people like MLS supporters as well, but people just rallying around the idea of this competition being so important historically and culturally. And just like, this goes back to 1914. This is like predates pretty much almost any soccer establishment, club or league in this country. And like, to participate in it is like a huge honor, and it's an amazing thing. And I know it was sort of like the dream for the Vermont Green founders, and it happened much sooner than they expected, but like, it means so much to the clubs, to the players, to the fans. And it's been really cool seeing people get excited about it, and seeing the response from our win on Tuesday from around the US and around the world. Like, and I don't mean that in around the world, like it's amazing. People are excited about a small club generating a lot of interest, having good results, and pushing like a really positive message on and off the field. And I think a really great moment for people to rally behind all these smaller clubs around the US.
And you know, where are you going to get stories like El Farolito going taking out the Little Pharaohs, as we know, named after, you know, it's the club team for a bunch of burrito places out in San Francisco, taking down, you know, Portland's MLS Next team. Like, that's just awesome. Like, that's what this competition is built for, is moments like that. And like, why wouldn't you want to be a part of that?
Well, you know, I think that right now that the excitement that we see being generated by this cup run, by this cup tournament, and the upsets that are happening, and hopefully more USL2 teams are successful. I think that you're going to see a shift in the attitude of the MLS after this year, because I think that it's being recognized around the soccer world, or at least it through US soccer fans. It's being recognized that they were the holdup in this tournament, that their want to make money out of this tournament, and their great lie about fixture congestion, we've seen through it as fans. We're not, you know, soccer fans, we're not dummies, you know, we're not dummies. We see through that. And as much as it's not necessarily individual clubs, it was the league that decided which clubs were going to send their MLS Next teams. It wasn't the owners of the teams, because the owners of the teams, I feel a lot of them were under the impression that their teams were going to end up playing, but they just didn't know when and how they were going to do it. The MLS, the management made a miscalculation. I think they're going to see that in the end. And next year, and maybe the year after, you're going to see MLS back in this thing, because you know what? Even if their teams get beat and they get embarrassed, like the Portland Timbers did, not necessarily embarrassed, but like those are young kids who are still trying to make it too, right? But they're gonna see that even if that happens to their clubs, it's still publicity. Any publicity, whether it's bad or good, is good for you. It can be good.
I don't know,
for
man. I admire your optimism, but like I feel like I have less faith in MLS understanding, reading the room and making a decision based on this year's Open Cup. I think they could very much go in the opposite direction and be like, no, we're going to slowly strangle this thing out of existence because it's not our sole property. And we can't fully capitalize on the like licensing rights and the broadcast rights. So why would we be involved in it? But who knows? Like I think it could go either way. I just have less faith in them making a decision that, based on public sentiment, and as opposed to like making a decision based on purely like pure greed, for lack of a better word.
Right. No. I mean, I understand that. Maybe I'm just the optimist on this podcast.
I hope you're right.
I tend to be the pessimist
in the Open Cup.
I tend to be the pessimist, the cynic in the group, but
I was going to say that, you know, I'm kind of splitting the middle between the three of us, because I do agree with Mike that yes, there has been, you know, at least maybe this is just from us being super plugged into kind of the lower league ecosystem and communications on, you know, all the social media that's out there. Like, yeah, this has been a really kick-ass first round of the US Open Cup. It's got great stories. There have been great games. But I do also agree with Tyler that it is going to take some activism amongst fans of MLS teams to say things like, no, we don't want the League's Cup. This is not something that we're interested in. Why go and, you know, block off, what is it, a whole month of the regular season to play like a super quick cash grab tournament? You know, there have been many fan supporters groups, you know, notably in St. Louis. You know, that's a team that has, in a city that has a great history of participating in the Open Cup, of people declining their league League Cup tickets that come with their season tickets. Like, it is going to take that kind of activism, not just from fans of lower league teams, but also fans all over the American soccer ecosystem, to say that, no, this is something that's important to us. This is something that is meaningful to us. It's meaningful to our, you know, just kind of greater sports ecosystem in the country to have tournaments like this, where it's like a true meritocracy. Like, if you're good enough and you play a good couple of games, like, you will get your shot at the big time. You will play the big boys. And, like, again, how could you not want that? Obviously, Dungarvor doesn't want that, because there's nothing exactly in it for him. But it's, you know, I do think that, yeah, like, ride the groundswell, keep on going and watching streams of the Open Cup. I'm glancing at FUTMob right now, because Western Mass is down 1-0 to Union Omaha. But after we do get off of this pod, I am going to be streaming the remainder of that game.
I'm pulling for those guys. I'd love for them to do well.
Yeah,
I do. I would love for them to pull another cup set. But, you know, it's going to take more than just having some real firecracker games throughout the Open Cup.
To your point, Tyson, I think trying to pull out of the Open Cup and trying to diminish it actually just added fuel to the fire. I think it's backfired in ways that MLS probably didn't expect. And I think it was a gross miscalculation on their part. And also just the manner in which they did it was also just really, like, poorly executed. So it wasn't just like, oh, we're not doing it. It was like all these half steps sort of implications. And yeah, I think it's really galvanized, like, the non-MLS clubs and leagues in a way that not much else could have. And if anything, it's sort of like reinforced that part of American soccer, and hopefully that leads to, you know, increased interest and participation. So
yeah, fingers crossed. I think that was kind of my greater point, is that it was a gross miscalculation. And I think that they're going to eventually see that this was a bad move for them. It's going to end up hurting them financially in the end. But how financially is it going to hurt them? Is it going to be like, oh, I dropped a couple $100 bills, well, I'll get over it. Or is it going to be like, you know, they lost millions in the stock market, you know? How is it going to affect them? Is you know, eventually, are players going to eventually go to the USL Championship? Probably not. You know, and just stick with Championship and boost up the USL? Probably not. They're probably going to want to go into the MLS. They're probably going to want to go on to bigger and better things and make their names where they can, where there are billionaire owners who are sitting there in their giant stadiums and paying a lot of money for some players. And, you know, players want to go play against Messi and Suarez, you know, and boost and those type of players. So, like, you know, I mean, MLS might not be hurt financially by this, but I think their reputation will be hurt. And I think that they're going to have to realize that at some point.
It's an uphill battle for sure. And I think financially, it's, even if you manage to get a completely united front from all the USLs and NISAs and NPSLs, like, it would still, you know, financially, that's still, like, you know, nothing. It's a David and Goliath situation when it comes to what MLS is doing. But like you said, it's as much a social and cultural thing where, like, to the great credit of all these supporters groups of MLS teams, like, they're not having it. And, like, it's been really heartening to see the responses from people who are like, yeah, I'm a Columbus Crew fan, but, like, the hell with them. For, like, I'm not going to go to, like, a Leagues Cup game. And
they want to see their players playing in the US Open Cup against teams that they never would have seen before.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I think about, like, last year, like, like the Pittsburgh Riverhounds had an absolutely amazing run. And
great
like,
run,
that
right?
story yeah. is great for US soccer across the board. And even if it's at the expense of an MLS team, and like, if you can play and lose to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, like you should be playing them. They are legit competition, you know? So.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get in some final thoughts. In the final thought question tonight is going to be, what do you see for the Green going forward into the spring? And what do you expect? Because now that we've seen a game with actual players on an actual field with an actual ball against an actual team with an actual win, what do you see going forward? What do you expect, Tyson?
I mean, it is obviously still very early. I think that this is a incredibly encouraging start to the Vermont Green season. I hope that we are able to hang on to as many of these great players as we can. Although, of course, no one's going to begrudge anyone if they're able to, you know, sign a pro contract while they're here and able to make a jump to USL1 or to the championship or hell to the MLS. Like, you know, if Jake Ashford, through playing in these cup games and playing in the USL2, is able to get a pro contract somewhere, that is amazing. That would be great for him. We, you know, like, no one's gonna begrudge any of these guys. Yes, that kind of opportunity. And I think that is why people come to the Green. That's why players want to play for us. We give them these kinds of opportunities like they had earlier this week against Lexington, to play in these great games in front of great crowds and, you know, just take part in just a fantastic atmosphere.
Tyler?
I mean, I've been excited for every Vermont Green season since the first one. This is the most excited I've been based on just the quality of players coming back and the quality of new players coming in. It seems like the sky's the limit for this squad. And I feel like there's like a really good chance of us winning the division and going pretty far in the playoffs. What I'm really curious about is how things shake down for our second Open Cup game. Like, who's coming back? Where's it going to be? Like, how do you, can you conjure up that sort of magic twice? There are a lot of variables, but look, the fact that we're able to sit here and talk about our second US Open Cup game is amazing, right? That's beyond what I think any of us would have dreamed. Like, I was hoping for us to go into this last game just to be competitive, to score a goal maybe, and to to be in contention for at least 70 to 90 minutes. So to be talking about a second US Open Cup game is beyond my expectations. And yeah, time will tell.
For me, I'm gonna kind of echo sentiments from both of you. I'm very excited to see what kind of squad we put together for the second matchup, where it's going to be. I know we put a bid in for the home match, and I know for a lot of the professional teams, it's tough for them to put a bid in based on their fixtures that they have in their leagues, and lots of times those bids go to the amateur teams. I think also that hopefully we as fans put in a good enough showing to show, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation that hosting another game at Virtue Field is good optics for them. So that said, I also hope that we get to keep a lot of these players, that a lot of these players stick around for the spring and summer. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with these players. And of course, we're excited for them when they go and get to play elsewhere. We, you know, when Aitor gets picked up by by Seattle when Gavork is playing, you know, playing for Revs too. You know, I always said Gavork might be a little bit too good for this league. You know, Nathan Messer is out there, you know, picked up by Rhode Island FC, and he gets in and he's there for a week and he features on the bench, you know, first game, and maybe even less
last year when we had Deba on the roster and then he got signed by Birmingham, which was amazing news. That was,
yeah, Deba as well. Like guys like Deba, Owen O'Malley, even Zach Zenge, who actually gets to come back to us this year. You know, Vermont Green is out there and eventually amongst professional soccer teams, whether it's MLS, whether it's even European teams, or international teams, Vermont Green is going to be a household name because of the way that they treat their players and the way that they train their players. And I really, really think that going forward, we're going to have a super successful season this year. And I think that we're going to put in a real challenge on the league this year. And hopefully the playoff system is going to change to help us out a little bit, because we accrued more points than most teams in USL 2 and still didn't make the playoffs.
Got robbed.
Got robbed. We did get robbed. But that's okay. It's part of our legacy. It's part of our story now. So any last words from you, Tyson, before we sign off?
I'm probably not going to be able to say any words for quite a little bit after this. So no, my tea has run dry and my voice is dying. So this is a perfect ending point.
Lovely. And Tyler, any last words?
Sam, I need to go to bed. I'm still tired from Tuesday's game, but tired for all the right reasons. Gentlemen, up the green.
Guys, up the green, and may your brackets not be busted yet. UTFG.